I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's July 14th, and we have a lot to talk about. But first, I want to welcome you to the 150th episode of Real Talk MS. Last week, someone suggested that this was a milestone episode, but I only tend to think of the episodes that end in double zeros as milestones, so I'm looking ahead to celebrating our 200th episode of the podcast. However, I am more than happy to take this opportunity to thank you for listening to a podcast that, when I first launched, I hoped one day could reach 1,000 people. To me, that would have been a success. Well, last week's episode of Real Talk MS has already been downloaded by 10,000 people in 92 countries around the world. So whether you're listening to Real Talk MS in North America, or Europe, or Nepal, or Tajikistan, Estonia, Vietnam, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or anywhere else on Earth, I hope you know that you're part of a community that extends pretty far and pretty wide. And I hope you know how much I appreciate the time you invest in listening to Real Talk MS, sending me your suggestions and feedback. You know, I try my best to respond to everything you send my way. So if we haven't connected yet, I hope we will soon. I've tried to make it super easy for you to get in touch. You can shoot me an email at John, that's J-O-N, at realtalkms.com. You can send me a DM on Twitter at realtalkms_J-O-N. That's realtalkms_John. You can call the Real Talk MS listener hotline. The number in the U.S. is area code 310-526-2283. Or you can join us as we continue the conversation in the Real Talk MS Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/RealTalkMS. And Real Talk MS is all one word here. If you haven't checked out our Facebook group, I hope you'll consider joining us there. My guest for episode 150 of Real Talk MS is the CEO of Genentech, Alexander Hardy. Genentech is a biotech company that many of you know as a manufacturer of Ocrevus, the first approved disease-modifying therapy that treats both relapsing-remitting MS and progressive MS. And to date, Ocrevus remains the only FDA-approved therapy for treating primary progressive MS. During our conversation, Alexander and I get into the cost of MS prescription medications, the real costs of bringing a new drug to market, racial disparities and inequities in our healthcare system, and more. It's a wide-ranging conversation that you're definitely going to want to hear. But before we get to my conversation with Genentech CEO Alexander Hardy, there are a few other things that you should know about. Resilience has always been a necessary and important trait for people living with the unpredictability of MS. And living with MS through these uncertain and unprecedented times has made resilience an even more necessary and important trait. My friend, Dr. Brandon Bieber, is a board-certified neurologist who specializes in treating MS and other immunological diseases of the nervous system. And last September, Dr. Bieber was a guest on the podcast, and we discussed his new book, Resilience in the Face of Multiple Sclerosis. And we're talking about that book again today because Dr. Bieber would like to send you a free copy. To receive your free copy of Resilience in the Face of Multiple Sclerosis, just jump onto Twitter and send a tweet to @Brandon_Bieber requesting your copy of the book. That's all you have to do. And I'll include these very simple instructions along with Dr. Bieber's Twitter handle in today's show notes. While we're talking about free stuff, the folks at CanDo MS have a great lineup of Jumpstart programs coming up, and they're all virtual programs, so you can participate from the comfort of your own home. The virtual Jumpstart programs include 3 self-guided courses, and then a live online program which includes group discussions and a Q&A session with MS experts. Upcoming programs include Building a Brighter Future on July 25th, When Aging and MS Collide on August 5th, Parenting with MS on August 15th, and Young Adults with MS on August 18th. And if you'd like to find out more about these programs or register to participate, you'll find the link in today's show notes. I always try to honor the MS warriors who find unique and creative ways to raise funds to support the National MS Society. And this year, that support is especially important. With the cancellation of literally hundreds of local Walk MS and Bike MS events this year, the MS Society is looking at a multi-million dollar shortfall in their annual fundraising. And as I often remind you, the MS Society is the largest private funder of MS research in the world. So this budget shortfall shouldn't be acceptable to anyone. I'm pleased to send a shout out today to Blake Shader, an MS warrior who's hosting his 12th annual Longest Day of Golf beginning this Sunday, July 19th at Berkshire Country Club in Reading, Pennsylvania. It's called the Longest Day of Golf because the golfers tee off at 6 p.m. on Sunday and play continues until 6 p.m. Monday, July 20th. And all 24 hours of golf are being played to raise funds for the National MS Society. Blake's mom, Becky, lived with MS, and this do-it-yourself fundraising event allows Blake and his friends to do what they love while raising thousands of dollars for the MS Society. If you're hosting a do-it-yourself fundraising event to benefit the Society, please let me know about it so that we can share it with everyone in the Real Talk MS community. Blake's upcoming event has already raised over $10,000, and if you'd like to support Blake's Longest Day of Golf, you'll find a link to the secure online fundraising page in today's show notes. For a long time, the conversation among MS researchers and clinicians has been that relapsing remitting MS and progressive MS are two separate clinical entities where patients accumulate disability through different mechanisms. But a new analysis of the data from 2 identical phase 3 clinical trials for Ocrevus indicates that for people living with relapsing remitting MS, 80 to 90% of their overall disability accumulation occurs independently of relapses. This is a hugely significant departure from how relapsing remitting MS and progressive MS have been defined. In relapsing remitting MS, the thinking has been that new MS symptoms occur in isolated attacks or relapses, and disability builds up in stages following each relapse. And in progressive MS, the thinking has been that disability builds up continuously over time, independent of relapses. Well, the new analysis of data from more than 1,600 people living with MS challenges these definitions, and I'll say it again, the data suggests that among people with relapsing remitting MS, disability accumulates in a progressive manner rather than due to relapses. I'll let the research team conclude this bit of news themselves. This is what they wrote concluding their study. Quote, "The study strongly supports that MS may be a single disease continuum with an underlying progressive disease course and a highly variable superimposed accumulation of disability resulting from relapses with incomplete recovery." That's the end of the quote. I can promise that we'll be hearing much more about this new way of classifying and defining multiple sclerosis. And if you'd like to review the details of this study, I'll include a link in today's show notes. A lot of people have a hard time talking about money, and newly published results of a study indicate that This same generalization can be applied to people living with MS. I don't think I have to remind anyone listening to this podcast that MS care can be incredibly expensive. In the United States, even good health insurance frequently leaves families affected by MS with a very significant financial burden. So a research team at Emory University asked MS patients at an outpatient neurology clinic to complete a 15-minute written survey that included questions about the finances associated with their MS care, as well as questions about how these patients educated themselves about and coped with the costs of their care. 243 patients completed the survey. 76.6% were female, and the average age was 44 years old. The survey results showed that 85% of the patients had an interest in discussing the costs of their MS care. 60% wanted to have that conversation with their neurologist, but only 20% reported having had that conversation during the previous 3 months. And 16% of the survey respondents reported contacting their insurance company to discuss their out-of-pocket costs. If you'd like to review the details of this study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. But I have to say, I don't find these survey results to be the least bit surprising. And I think a lot of the reluctance to have these price-related conversations with our healthcare providers begins with some of the words that are used in healthcare. Now, the healthcare industry refers to patients, but I've always preferred the term customers, because that's what we are. We're customers who are paying, either directly or indirectly, for treatment. And customers are traditionally given enough information in an understandable format to make appropriate consumer decisions. This happens in every other area of life where you're spending a lot of money. But it somehow gets a bit twisted when we're buying healthcare. I'd love to see that fixed. We should be given the same plain language access to healthcare that we routinely receive when we bring our car in for servicing. And we don't need any sort of scientific discovery to fix this. We just have to agree on more honest naming conventions. While we're on the subject of costs related to MS care, the most significant single cost is usually the cost of disease-modifying therapies. So I asked my guest about that, and in a moment, we'll hear my conversation with Alexander Hardy, the CEO of Genentech. My guest today is Alexander Hardy, the Chief Executive Officer of Genentech, a biotech company that many of you may know as a manufacturer of Ocrevus, among many other medications. I began our conversation by asking Alexander to characterize Genentech's relationship with the National MS Society.
The basis of any relationship is, you know, aligned interests, and we have those alignments, advancing research, really understanding how and why the disease progresses, topics like increasing diversity and inclusion in research by really prioritizing health equity in clinical studies, and then, you know, helping people get the medicines that they absolutely need to have to be able to control and manage their disease. These are all topics that we're also very, very interested and committed to. And we found that the MS Society a really, you know, really fantastic partnership. We're total admiration of the work that it does, leading MS advocacy, the role it plays even globally. And really just making sure that people with MS are really at the center of everything that they do. So we like it from a company partnership, and I'm also really always inspired to see how the work of the MS Society actually inspires individual employees, and seeing the level of engagement of Genentech employees with on their as it were time off. Seeing them get involved with the fundraising activity the society does is to me, really indicates the great work the society does and makes me really proud of our work together.
I'm glad you brought up getting these important life-changing medicines to people affected by MS. I think that we can probably agree that the high cost of MS therapies can be an obstacle to access. From your perspective, what contributes to the challenges of access to MS medications for the people who need them?
The topic of high cost of therapies is a really important one, and one we feel very strongly about. We saw the MS Society's findings from its survey really show that the troubling statistics around the proportion of people who either alter or stop taking their medication due to high costs, and the anxiety on top of what people are already facing with the condition around their ability to afford in the future, that the treatments are so important to the management of their disease. We think this is a really important topic. I could talk broadly about the changes that we're seeking to make and the proposals we're making in Washington to try and address reimbursement and access and pricing for medicines, because we think that cost for patients is a real issue and that change needs to happen, and that includes change from the industry. But that's all fixing the system. We realize that we have a responsibility ourselves in how we make our treatments, and specifically in MS, obviously Ocrevus, accessible. And so, that led us to be very thoughtful around the approach we took to pricing Ocrevus. And then in addition, the steps we've taken to continue to make sure that price and access, as much as we can possibly make it, is not a reason why people wouldn't have the opportunity of receiving the benefit of Ocrevus. So with regard to pricing, we priced Ocrevus when we launched it at 25% below the comparator medicine that was in our phase 3 clinical studies. And it was 20% below the list price of the average MS medicine. And since then, and we launched the drug in 2017, we haven't taken a price increase since then. And now we're 37% below that drug we compared ourselves to in our phase 3 study, and 30% below the average annual cost of MS medicines. So, I think that's an important part of it. But also, we have a very complex insurance system in the United States. And we recognize that, people need help getting through the system. And that's the other aspect that we focused on, is really making sure that anybody who's prescribed Ocrevus gets the support they need to navigate through that system. And we actually have these roles, patient navigators, who work one-on-one with patients to help them, answering their questions, helping them understand their insurance coverage, make sure that they can get, if they need support with the cost of their medicines, or if their insurance status changes and they lose their insurance coverage, making sure that they're connected with our patient foundation and the possibility of receiving free medicine. This is one-on-one, and this is the sort of stuff that we really need to do, because it's great to have a disease-modifying treatment, but unless you can actually get on it and stay on it, take it regularly, then you won't have the opportunity of receiving the benefit that was demonstrated in those carefully designed clinical studies. Real life is a lot of additional challenges, and we think it's our role to help try and navigate those aspects.
When people consider the cost of MS therapies, I don't know that they always see everything that it takes to successfully bring a prescription drug treatment to market. I'm hoping you might share how long it takes to go through all the required phases of a clinical trial, maybe a ballpark about how much a typical, if there is such a thing, clinical trial may cost, and what percentage of the clinical trials underwritten by Genentech and other companies really fall short of reaching a positive outcome at all.
Great questions, John. We are a research-driven company. That's our area that we play in, and that determines our success in the medium long run. Is the impact, the innovation of the new treatments that we bring for really devastating diseases and conditions. We spend $11 billion a year globally on research and development, which is more than any other company or any other healthcare company in the world. And so this is an absolute focus for us. And we're always seeking to get better at innovation, because again, that's our lifeblood. If we're not innovating, then it's the end for us and the end of our mission. So in terms of sort of statistics of how R&D works, when you're investing $11 billion, again, you're really looking to improve your success rate and reduce your time. But in reality, it takes about 10 years for a new medicine to go all the way from discovery through to clinical trials to approval. In some cases, it can take a lot longer than that, but 10 years is the average. In terms of how much it costs per molecule, the reality is, if you're seeking to make big impacts, you have to take risks, and risks are a big element of what we have to do to make that sort of progress. So you're seeing success rates on average for the industry of a drug that goes into human studies is around 10-12% success rate. And so, the cost of R&D for every successful molecule not only has to pay for the molecules that are successful, but of course, you have to pay for the research and development of the molecules that aren't successful to make sure you've got a sustaining innovation engine. And so the total cost, on average per molecule is about $2.6 billion, which is a really significant investment. And that's part of the equation that we all need to think about is, making sure that drugs are accessible to patients that need them, but at the same time, making sure we're sustaining the innovation and taking those risks that we know we need to take to make those big step forwards in terms of treatment.
Well, while we're talking about R&D, there are efforts currently underway both here in the United States and the European Union to more fully engage patients and caregivers in drug development and other clinical research. What are your thoughts about not only looking to MS patients for the patient data that they supply, but more fully engaging them in all of the relevant decision-making stages of a research initiative?
Yeah, this is a really important topic. I think, patient data, let me just briefly touch on that and then talk about engaging with patients fully throughout all the stages of development and research and thereafter. First of all, this is a very exciting time in terms of using the richness of data, applying advanced analytical techniques to that data, things like machine learning, artificial intelligence, to really unlock the underlying biology of diseases. I think this has the potential for us to make a lot more advances in treating some of the most difficult diseases, and then making sure that the unique patient, it's the unique treatment that will result in them, having the best result. I think that's the other aspect of this sort of revolution in terms of biology understanding and data that we have right now. But I think, beyond the cooperation of patients in terms of data, I think there's tremendous opportunities, and particularly in the area of neuroscience, of really deep partnerships with patients throughout the research and development process. I mean, neurological conditions, many of the manifestations apparent to the patient, and us really understanding firsthand from patients their experience with the disease, the natural history of the disease, the impacts on their on all of their activities and their aspirations of what they would like to be like and experience. And then to understand how the treatment does or does not help, the side effects that they may experience. It's just really rich information for us to better design clinical studies and design treatments. And then to educate healthcare professionals around how best to use the treatment to get the best outcomes for their patients. So particularly in the neuroscience area, we think collaboration with patients is enormously important in the design of clinical studies, into what areas we're seeking to make progress in R&D, because what's most meaningful for patients is ultimately what we want to try and capture with the molecule and with the design of the clinical program. And as regards data, actually in neuroscience, about 90% of our clinical studies have a significant patient input as part of the process of designing and running the clinical study.
That's very encouraging to hear. I want to circle back for a second to access to care again. Institutional inequities in our healthcare system often lead to unequal access to care for members of minority communities. I'm curious about what work Genentech is broadly doing to address these kinds of disparities, and what other work is Genentech involved in more specifically to increase the understanding of MS in these underserved populations?
Yes, thanks, John. I mean, this topic is of inequity in our healthcare system, I think, is really coming to sharp focus with the pandemic, and this is a topic that we've been focused on for several years, because the facts are really just not good enough. Only around 10% of U.S. patients are involved in clinical studies. You know, that's already too low a figure. You know, the opportunity to gain the benefit from for advances in science, we should be expanding that number. But when you look at the representation of underserved populations in studies, it really becomes from being a bad picture to a completely unacceptable picture. So of those 10%, only 5 to 15% are non-Caucasians. And in the reality of where the demographics are going in the United States, this basically means that our clinical studies are not representative of our current population and certainly not of the future population as an industry. And that's completely unacceptable. So, you know, several years ago, we launched an initiative around advancing inclusive research. The goals of that are to really ensure that clinical trial participants are representative of the patient populations that we serve. And by that, we'd be making sure that these populations have the benefit, the possibility of benefiting, the opportunity from benefiting from investigational medicines. And secondly, as I was mentioning with regard to data earlier, that science really understands the clinical genomic data from all populations to really advance research, development, and better clinical care. We have to have those populations in these studies if we're going to make sure that right at the very start, we don't create these health inequities that we're dealing with as a society right now. So within MS, I think this is a real topic. And, you know, we've had a focus on creating and supporting programs, making grants, research focused on people of color, really trying to improve inclusive and minority research in MS. And in terms of tangible, you know, efforts and results, I just saw that we've initiated the first study site in a study called CHIMES, which is an open-label, multi-center phase 4 study that's evaluating disease activity and biomarkers in African-American and Hispanic people with relapsing multiple sclerosis treated with Ocrevus. So, I mean, this is really exciting to see, you know, a specific study, well-designed, with really important outcomes, specifically focused on African American and Hispanic populations with MS, and you know, my hope is that we'll be able to provide, you know, disease insights and better tailored care to African American and Hispanic people with MS, and we can play our part in partnership with the community and starting to address the issues of health inequity. In this case, specifically in MS, but our ambitions are broader than MS.
Well, that's really great to hear. Alexander Hardy, I want to thank you for all of the important work that Genentech continues to do in helping people live their best lives with MS. And thanks for talking with me today.
John, thanks so much. I really enjoyed our conversation, and thanks for all the work you do too.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/150. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or text. I don't think I have to tell anyone listening to this podcast that the COVID-19 pandemic has intensified and in some cases multiplied the challenges of living with MS. From having difficulty affording MS medications, to adjusting to increased isolation, to coping with the added uncertainty of wondering how you or your family might be personally affected by COVID-19. More than ever before, people living with MS need access to reliable information, support, and connection. We're witnessing that even during a pandemic, MS doesn't stop, and neither does a National MS Society. So they've established the National MS Society COVID-19 Response Fund to ensure that the Society can continue meeting the urgent and expanding needs of the MS community during these unprecedented times. During the pandemic, we've seen the MS Society create virtual programming and virtual support groups literally on the fly so that no one has to face MS alone. They've created resources and provided information so that doctors and nurses can deliver the very best care. They've continued to amplify the voices of the MS movement to influence critical public policy decisions. And they've never stopped advancing research to find cures for MS. I know that these are financially difficult times for a lot of people, but I'm asking that as you're able, please make a donation to support the National MS Society. It's easy to donate. You can text the word GIVE to 68686, and you'll get a link right to the MS Society's COVID-19 Response Fund webpage. Or if you prefer, I've created an online shortcut to get you to that same webpage, so you can visit realtalkms.com/COVID-19 Response Fund, and that's all one word, and make your donation. You'll find that link in today's show notes. But however you choose to contribute, please contribute today. It's never been more important. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.